This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the Thursday morning edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. There's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. My man, got busy a couple days ahead here before we get to the weekend. People say it's the dog days. I don't know if that's true, Jensen. We've always got something cooking, whether it's golf, getting ready for another PGA Tour event here in just a little bit, and of course, Major League Baseball on the daily.
Nice day on the diamond yesterday. It was a well-deserved bounce back. We really crushed it and feel good about where we were. Matter of time for some of these processes to play out into the positive, but you're right. A lot of baseball yesterday. We only got five games today, so we get to catch our breath. Dave, I don't know if you've looked at the calendar. It's almost August. You know what that means, brother. Oh, we got a lot of people descending here on Northeast Ohio for the Hall of Fame game. Football right around the corner. Cannot wait for the Pigskins to start flying here in a couple of weeks' time.
And to that end, we got a great show lined up. Dan Hoard is going to join us later on in this hour to talk more things Cincinnati Bengals. A lot of people really like those Bengal Tigers this year. And Mark Zeno is going to join us down there from the ATL, talking all things Falcons and maybe sneaking a little Braves talk as well with Mark back in the program today. But all good things must come to an end. That's where we begin today's edition of our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Thank you, Kyle Bradish. So says the rest of the AL East and maybe the American League writ large, because that 15-game winning streak comes to an end in game two of the double dip. But game one, they do get that win to extend it, and then it finally comes to an end. But Jensen, what a run that was, 15 in a row.
If you followed us yesterday, I think I had told you I liked that second game, regardless of Boston and whoever starter they would name. Just knowing that Bradish, the way he'd been pitching, it felt like the matchup would be pretty good. But the four runs to start in the day game, and you're like, okay, well, I guess it's not ending for a while. If you did do the $100 money line rollover, Dave, during this streak, and decided, you know what? Enough's enough. I'm going to cash out. I've been greedy enough. $920,000 profit. Now, you were almost a self-made millionaire in 2 weeks if you did the money line rollover. Always fun to look at some of those numbers, Dave, just because, I mean, how do you do it? I think that's the one question I'd ask you. Like, when would you start, even if you wanted to? I'll take the Mets. Now, it's not going to happen this year, but if they did, would you start at like a four-game win streak? Like, maybe I should kind of catch some fire here and see what you do. That's always one of the challenges I have when I see these astronomical. It's fun to talk about astronomical numbers, right? How much money you could have made winning 2 weeks in a row. But think of the heart rate. Okay, you get $100,000. You know, you're rolling it over. Oh, yeah, let's just keep going. Let's keep going. How would you handle that if you actually had it live and we're having that rollover in queue?
Such a great question, and it's such a hard answer, because I did join you on game two yesterday, and I was asked on social media, who's got the guts to go against the Red Sox? And I sheepishly raised my hand, and I went with the Kyle Bradish theory, and it worked out, Jensen. But I got nervous, right, because I'm thinking, wow, I'm really, for the first time, and we picked the right time to go against them in game two. You really do not know. Look, I don't play that law of averages thing. Oh, well, it's got to end. Sometimes I'll keep playing it and just keep doubling it until they lose. You better have one heck of a bankroll if you're doing that against the Red Sox here. I think it is more that momentum feel. And if you start to go maybe three, four games in, like if I saw the Mets getting on a small roll like that, Jensen, I might look at the rotation, see the opponents coming up, and then start to think about, can I realistically try to get this thing to 7-8? I don't even know if I'd had the guts. If you did win, say, 3-4 in a row, to keep rolling it over, I might take some of that profit back and then make sure, if I wanted to start a new streak here, to make sure we lock in some profit. But boy, if you went down that road, Red Sox fans, congratulations. They've already made your year, that's for sure. Final days of media days here for the SEC. It's going to be Arkansas, LSU, Mississippi State. They're going to be taking the podium today. Jensen, it has been fun. To a degree, with these media days down there, we kind of kid that we might not get a whole lot out of it. We might have got something out of the new Florida coach we'll talk about later on in the program. But it is their opportunity, especially for the new coaches, to go out there, Jensen, and kind of say, this is the start of something new, and I'm the right guy to lead it.
Yeah, particularly today, right? Arkansas with Ryan Silverfield coming over from Memphis. He'll have his first SEC media days. You have, I guess he's new because he's the new coach of LSU, Lane Kiffin. I can't wait to see what kind of, you know, intrigue and social media viral moments we will have there. But yeah, it has been fun to kind of see it. And this has also been one of those conferences too. They're up against it right now, Dave. They're, I think I saw Dan Patrick, great friend of the show, characterize the SEC at now in our day and age of NIL. They were the bully kind of at recess, and then all of a sudden they got punched in the nose, and now they want to change the rules and do things their own way. So, hey, this is why we play the games. Miami, Notre Dame, the head-to-head usually settles most things. Cannot wait to see what we get out of the final SEC Media Day conference activities later on today.
Yeah, much more on what we saw yesterday. I think it was eye-opening for some, and then maybe we have to take a step back. We're talking about John Summerall there with Florida and whether or not a lot of that was just for show. Jose Ramirez is going to be back for the Guardians, Jensen. So I know that you've been looking at this team and going to kind of smoke and mirrors sometimes how they score runs. We know this is the one guy that can truly be a run producer.
Yeah, they were 500. They missed 30 games. They were 15-15. So we kind of surmised if you could tread water without no question your best player and your most valuable player. Hey, Guardians are five games above 500. They dropped that game that he comes back in yesterday. The Twins offensively being able to batter Slade Ciccone. And that was a game we identified yesterday. We felt the matchup favored Bailey Ober, and the offense really rewarded us there early and often. Series finale later today. We'll check some of the numbers here. But again, you're looking now, Dave, if you include the Guardians, who are still trailing the White Sox in the Central, Guardians would be the number five seed if the playoffs start today in the American League. Red Sox, by virtue of that long win streak, would be the sixth seed. Between the Guardians and all the way down to all of a sudden the hard-charging Houston Astros, I know you looked at them weeks ago, we got six teams within 4.5 games for two playoff spots right now. So it's going to tighten. And if you like that, the National League is pretty bananas as well.
Getting ready to get underway here for the 3M Open a little bit later on this morning right there in Minnesota. And again, it didn't get to where I wanted it to get to, Jensen, but I still have never seen anything like this. With world number one in the field, it didn't get to exactly $20, but it got close. Scottie Scheffler is plus 260 to win the tournament here as we get ready to tee it up. And Kurt Kitayama is the second betting choice at 24-1. I do not know that I've ever seen a variance quite like this. We'll hear from Scottie later on in the program. But Jensen, I did add some top 20 plays that I wanted to get out before this tournament began this morning. So it's not just because his dad tweeted at me. You know I like this guy anyway. It's Maverick McNealy. It's the son. Top 20. I did pull the trigger there at plus $1.05. So hard decks. You knew the rules of engagement. You broke them. Hopefully Maverick McNealy knows the rules of engagement. Let's get to that top 20 at plus $1.05. I mentioned Jackson Suber, another one that I'll be watching this week as well, Jensen. I played him at plus $1.50. to get me a top 20 from Jackson Suber. I got him at 61 down to 44-1 now. So they've been moving on Jackson Suber here in the last couple days. And then the last one here, Aaron Wise. And I told you I do like Aaron Wise from a couple years ago, and he's back now at 4-1 to make the top 20. So, Jensen, that's what I've got in play. And just a crazy top 30 with ties parlay. Denny McCarthy, Keita Nakajima, Ricky Castillo, Maverick McNealy, Aaron Wise. That's a $10 wager, Jensen. That would net me back over $3,500. I do not advise playing those pizza money parlays, but I like to give out one bomb. Put it on social media if you want it out there, people. Have at it at D-Raw Sports, a little $10 pizza money bomb play as well. Did you add any top 20s or anything, or are you still with the same portfolio as yesterday?
Yeah, here's what I did just this morning, Dave, and no outrights for me, just knowing how ridiculous it is with Scotty. Like, I just,
yeah,
I don't want to bring a rock to, you know, a gun show, if you will. This is just not where. I really drew. Remember, I told you earlier in the week, I was just trying to reevaluate on, you know, maybe overshooting some placement markets. I've missed a lot of tournaments where it's been a stroke or two different. So when I wrote down my plays, I took, instead of like, let's say it's a top 20, I went to a top 30. So I'll start from the bottom and kind of move to the top. Mac Meisner, I played at a top 30, including ties on DraftKings for a quarter unit plus $1.18. And then three top 20 market plays here. Mav McNeely, we will definitely be challenging the hard deck with Mav here this week. Plus $1.12 for top 20. Tom Kim, plus $1.18. And then Kurt Kitayama, plus $1.05. So no outrights. We're going to keep it tight. Just four of the placement market plays this week, and hopefully we find ourselves a little bit of profit.
Love it. We'll talk more about that as the show goes on today before that tournament kicks off if you are interested in getting involved there. LeBron James, apparently he's upset with the commissioner because Adam Silver's upset that we still don't have basically a timeline. Like, LeBron, what are you doing? So says the commission. Is anybody out of line here, Jensen?
I mean, do we really still care? I know I speak for many, I think in this area, they're like, I mean, just be done with it already. And I think it's hysterical. And the narcissism continues where, hey, you're upset that I didn't make, I think this is folly. I don't think Adam Silver cares. LeBron, you're going to play great. If not, we got plenty of stars. We're fine. For what it's worth, prediction markets still have Miami about a 47% chance right now. Cleveland at 27%. Golden State at 16%. By the way, those social media positions, apparently the Heat people, those positions are now open. So if you're looking to be in the social media department, don't put out the wrong post that LeBron's going to be a member of the Heat before that press conference.
Kind of a big deal because LeBron's still making it a big deal. Let's talk some Major League Baseball, Jensen, when we come back next right here on VSiN by the Book. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
NFL preseason is only a couple weeks away, and the smart money's already moving lines. Lock in on our football special for just $175 before the price goes up next month. You're going to get instant access to the VSiN NFL betting guide to help you attack futures, win totals, and player props. Plus, we're including the new Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide with over 425 player profiles, projections, rankings to help you prep for your fantasy draft. Sign up now. You're going to get full VSiN Pro access across every sport through the Super Bowl. That includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. I mean, Jensen, if we're not one-stop shopping here for the NFL, you want to play fantasy? We got you covered. You want to bet those sides totals, futures markets? It's all there for you, $175. It is actually a really good deal right now for you out there if you're not a VSiN Pro subscriber. Let's talk some Major League Baseball, and a really good day by you yesterday on the diamond, and probably an important split for Baltimore, really, in the grand scheme. Look, we're all talking about the winning streak, 15 wins in a row, but if you're Baltimore, Jensen, they were making some headway until those first two games against Boston. From the Baltimore side of things, as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline, how important is this next couple weeks for them?
Yeah, it's important for all, and glad you mentioned Baltimore, because remember, all the highlight and very much warranted focus was on Boston with the big winning streak. Baltimore had the second best winning streak at the time. They had won seven in a row and have played really well over the last handful of weeks. They're just three games out of the playoffs right now, tied with the Minnesota Twins, Seattle now, by virtue of the Reds handling them. Boy, what a series that was out west for Terry Francona's club. Mariners just two games back. So as I said, very tightly contested here. You have six teams within 4.5 games. And I think Detroit, is probably where I would look to as a team that's going to have to make a move here in the next 10 days. Because as we've said with our chaos candidates, I think they are 1A, Detroit and Tarek Skubal. And I would say San Diego would be 1B as far as where that trade market domino will start. The other side of it, too, would be not only an important split for Baltimore, an important split for the Yankees. You get the extras in game one. I watched most of that game because I really wanted to see where Gerrit Cole was. And we were having a rocking chair winner to the under for the majority of that game, Dave. And then did it get hairy? And then some. We needed some bullpenning from the Yankees to keep that to 8 total runs, getting the under 9.5 in game one. But more importantly, I think, Dave, for the Yankees to come back with Max Fried, who looks sensational in the nightcap there, that's a big boost to the ball club. So you get a split in the doubleheader there, 2-0, the shutout as the Yankees split that. And then the Orioles back on it with a convincing 5-1 win to end that Red Sox 15-game win streak.
You know, the Mets in Milwaukee yesterday, 4-3. We talked a lot about that game yesterday as well with Christian Scott and Logan Henderson. Run suppression there in Milwaukee, as you talked about yesterday in that 4-3 loss for the Metropolitans. But, Jensen, I got to be honest with you, as a Met fan, that's kind of what you want to see. Not the loss, obviously, but the fight and get one in the ninth and competitive again. They're looking a little bit better. Even in a loss, I can take something away from that. But that young pitching that the Mets might be starting to show here, and – if you're Henderson and Milwaukee, Jensen, it feels like they might have something here too.
Well, Milwaukee is really making a bid to be the best overall team, I think, in Major League Baseball. And when you kind of look at the numbers, and yes, both LA and Milwaukee kind of having a relay race between who takes the top spot the last week or so. But more importantly, and kind of what we saw last year, revisionist history would tell us, you're going to need depth to starting pitching. And, you know, we spoke with Jonathan Von Tobel early in the week. You and I had brought it up several weeks ago when we looked at workloads in the Cy Young market. You know, Cam Schlittler for the Yankees, they're going to really be mindful of his innings down the stretch because they need him in the playoffs. Same thing with the Brewers and Jacob Mizorowski. The great thing about Milwaukee is it just feels like it's been a pipeline for them to continually produce these young kids that can come up and be really, really credible and impactful. And Logan Henderson had been a guy. Adam Burke even featured him early in the year in spring training day and said, watch out for this kid. He could be an impact starter, pressed into duty because Brandon Woodruff has had the arm injury. So I think what's unique about Milwaukee, Dave, and I fully believe that they are the best contender against the LA Dodgers right now. If they make a deadline deal and find a way to bolster the rotation and find another bat, they are clearly the top contender in my eyes to taking out the Dodgers.
Dodgers with a big win yesterday, late runs against Philadelphia. Let me ask you very quickly in that context, kind of Dodgers, Phillies, Brewers, and to an extent with the Rays, and the Rays got another win against Toronto yesterday as well. The importance of that number one overall seed, if you will. And if you remember last year in this program, when I made that wager on Toronto, it was part and parcel with they had a 3-game lead at the break at the time that I made the wager. And I said, they have to win the division in order for me to have any shot. And it did play out that way that I didn't think they could go through as a wild card. They had to have home field advantage. And it really paid dividends against the Yankees, obviously, early. And certainly Seattle late to get to the World Series. How important would it be then for those other teams? And I don't know that's that important for the Dodgers, but it does feel like for the Brewers and or the Rays in the American League, Jensen, that in those handicaps, you'd want them to get those number one seeds. To it would mean more to them, I guess, Jensen, it feels like, than the others.
Okay, so interesting case study on this one. And I know that Gil Alexander was talking about making wagers on who would be the number one seed or some of those markets at DraftKings. And Dave, I think it's an interesting point you bring up. And I just thought of it as you were starting to sound it out on where the importance and the urgency is. Remember last year, you know, it was the Brewers who had the one seed, but it really didn't matter to the Dodgers. Okay. Obviously the 4-0 sweep of the National League Championship Series, Dodgers don't care. It's about getting everyone healthy and getting everything right. I think there is motivation there for the Brewers to be the one seed. And if you think that that is going to be something that plays out, then it would behoove people, I think, to take a little share of them at 4-1 for the National League number one seed. To that end, Dave, I don't think anyone from the National League East is going to catch either of these two teams, just kind of knowing they're going to have to beat up on each other coming through. So I just happened to look and see, excuse me, what the National League East division winning price would be. And the Braves right now are a $2 favorite. The Phillies are plus $1.60. Instead of playing that, a correlated play for you, maybe to go on DraftKings, the number three seed, the Braves are plus $1.05. The Phillies are 3-1. Better ROI for you if you do believe that the Dodgers and the Brewers continue their dominance and they'll have a relay race about who's the one seed. So that might be a better way if you're looking at division props right now and you think that this will be a tightly contested race between Atlanta and Philly. Why not go for that third seed, that exacta, if you will, and play the plus money price instead of laying the $2 with Atlanta or the shorter plus $1.60 with Philadelphia?
Love that handicap. And by the way, Atlanta did get a 7-6 win yesterday over San Diego. Another team I don't have anything invested in, but you know I'm keeping my eye on those Padres too to see if they can you know, maybe say to A.J. Preller, don't sell away the pieces, buy some pieces, then maybe I'll get invested there. The White Sox with a 4-2 win yesterday against the Rangers, Jensen. It's been an interesting series. They take 2 of 3 deep in the heart. I don't think that the White Sox are going away. And again, kind of like the Mariners, and you mentioned that with the Reds and their disappointing series there, it just feels like the Rangers and the Mariners are just sputtering, and thankfully they're in a division where they can do that.
Yeah, there's only three teams, Dave, that have 30 or more wins at home right now in the American League. That's Tampa Bay, that's the Chicago White Sox, and that's the Seattle Mariners. They could not hold serve against the Reds out west, and the Rangers had their own issues. They're just a game over 500 down there deep in the heart of Texas. They have a minus 30 run differential, Texas does. Remember, I told you, I don't know if I can trust that offense series in and series out. They did face some quality pitching here with Chicago, so it sort of illuminated that issue. I think I would be, I don't think I can still be any concerned about Seattle. I have had the patience of Job with them the entire
really have.
Year. And I just don't, again, if this were the National League where I'm like, oh, Seattle's going to have to go through Milwaukee, or they're going to have to go through the Dodgers. I'm like, all right, I kind of need to see something here. But I mean, we're not really scared of Tampa Bay or New York right now with Aaron Judge. We're not really scared of Chicago. We're not scared of Cleveland. So it still is kind of there for the taking. So I mean, I've come this far, Dave. I'm pot committed at this point. I still like my initial preseason play on the Mariners at 5-1 to win the American League. Jerry DePoto is going to make some sort of impact deal at the deadline. He's already alluded to it. They're ready to kind of shop at the top here. So excited to see where this is all going to play out.
The amazing part about that is you have them in pocket at 5-1. They're playing like, well, just kind of the hamster wheel, right? They're just not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And yet the numbers actually come down. You actually have a better number in pocket than what the current number is at plus 475. It's kind of amazing when you think about it in that context. So if they ever do hit that stride, where will that number go? You'll be sitting with a much better number, that's for sure, at plus 475. We mentioned SEC Media Days. We're going to talk a little bit more about what we saw and what we heard yesterday. And then there was some really funny back and forth about this on Twitter that we'll get to as well. That's all coming up next right here on VSiN by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
Winner Circle Proxy and VSiN are giving away two incredible prize packs. They're going to put two lucky fans into the world's biggest football contest absolutely free. One winner is going to receive a $1,000 entry into Circa Survivor. Another one's going to get a $1,000 entry in a Circa Million, and that's where me and Jensen are entered. Both winners are also going to receive a full season Winner Circle Proxy service, a VSiN studio tour, and a free month of VSiN Pro. Enter by Sunday, August 2nd, for your chance to win. That deadline's approaching. Visit winnercircleproxy.com/VSiN to enter today. That's winnercircleproxy.com/VSIN. Back alongside Jensen Lewis, Dave Ross here with you as we take a look back and a look ahead at SEC Media Days wrapping up today. Arkansas, LSU, Mississippi State, and Texas going to be taken to that podium today. Now, Jensen, yesterday there was some tumult, I would say, with John Summerall, the new head coach down there in Florida, because of something that happened at Media Day. Now, Jensen, you know the rules. You're an athlete. You get it. you go into a press conference, you go into something where a coach is talking. If you're a player, certainly, you better make sure those phones are on silent. Now, if you're a media member, are the rules different? Let's hear what happened yesterday with the new head coach of the Florida Gators.
How things were going to unfold, and you'd be kicked out of our team meeting. I swear, like, you're lucky I'm not going to throw this freaking podium right now. Like, drives me crazy. I would say, who is that? But I'm not going to embarrass anybody. But no.
Okay. Now, well, you might have missed the phone going off, and we know. Look, I'd be lying, Jensen, if I said that in my decades of covering press conferences, sometimes it happens. You go, oh, you freak out, and you turn the phone off really quickly. It happens. Summerall is making a point, though. I think a bigger point, Jensen. Right? Like, I'm going to run my team the way I run my team. And if that happened with one of my kids, I might not be as, shall we say, in his mind, gracious as he's being to not call out that media member.
Yeah, I would say is an A-minus on the delivery. It could have been an A-plus if he kind of cracked a little wry smile at the end there. You're just like, hey, I know you're not one of my players. But if you were, just know what the consequences are here. I have gone through this personally. Our first team meeting within Tim Corbin, who is still the head coach there at Vanderbilt for our baseball program. It wasn't a hi. It wasn't a hello. It was back when you could take the batteries out of your cell phone, Dave. How long ago it was, in 2002, 2003. That was his first words to us, welcoming us to the program. And then for 90 minutes, he went on and every detail of how we were going to change the program, how we were going to win, and we all wanted to run through a wall for Tim Corbin. Still the same to this day. So I think John Summerall, just doing what coaches do, right? This is how we go. Yep. This is what it's like now at the University of Florida. I can appreciate it from the athlete side. And I'll be fair, Dave, we've been on the media side now for a while, you and I. I think it's ingrained in me. Everything is on silent. I mean, no notifications from a laptop, an iPad. Like, I don't even remember what my ringtone sounds like. I think it's been on silent for like 5 years in a row.
Yeah, it's true. It's a different world that we live in these days. But to the bigger point, we talked about this with Florida football in general a little bit yesterday about changing the culture. And what a culture and the history they have there. It's decorated. It's national championship. It's Urban Meyer. It's Steve Spurrier winning. Like, to do that, and I know that some people got a little bit antsy with Summerall and calling him out on social media, a little bit too serious and all those things. But I guess that really is the message he wants to send to the kids. And if he's doing that to a media member, slightly in jest, I think that will resonate with the young athlete, correct?
Oh, I mean, they're all over social media. They watch everything. And you know that they're going to be talking about, oh, man, did you see Coach? Coach did that to a reporter. Yeah, that's meaningful stuff there for sure. Speaking of, I know we talked about it for people that missed the program yesterday. I would look at Florida's win total this year, Dave. And I know the schedule's brutal. I mean, they're road tests. You got to go to Jordan-Hare at Auburn. You got to go down to Texas. Missouri, they should be able to handle on the road. Kentucky's going to be really good. You got to go to Lexington, and then you got to go to Tallahassee for the cross-state rivalry with Florida State. Home against Ole Miss, home against Oklahoma, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, not in Jacksonville, in Atlanta against Georgia. So it's pretty daunting here for this SEC schedule, but they brought in, you know, a fair amount of the transfers that I think are going to impact them quite quickly. So I would like some of the plus money, if you can find an over 7.5 at plus money, I wouldn't mind taking a second look at that, just knowing his track record.
I thought it was curious too yesterday with Pete Golding taking to the podium, and we made this point yesterday on the program here on VSiN by the Books, that if there felt like one coach up there that really just doesn't, I don't want to say doesn't care about relating to the media, but he really is insulated, right? It's about him, it's about his staff, it's about his players. And yes, he's going to go out there and do the dog and pony show that he's got to do, but it doesn't seem that important to him. I wonder about the importance of his relationship with his old boss, which is Lane Kiffin. And so Lane now, of course, at LSU, and we all know about, boy, it just felt like it held college football hostage there for a little bit in the media with that back and forth of leaving, and still he wanted to coach there. It was very odd at the end of last year. What about that relationship with Pete and Lane? He discussed it yesterday.
Look, you know, I get this everywhere we go. So we're on our caravan tour right now with Ole Miss, and we go every Tuesday and Thursday and take a couple players and go around the country. So we go Q&A with everybody, so it's everybody tell me how you really feel about them. You know, they're like this intimate, you know, environment. But Lane and I are good. Like so, you know, I did not know Coach Kiffin prior to taking the Ole Miss job. I think everybody just assumes Alabama. I wasn't at Alabama when Coach Kiffin was, you know. So I didn't come to Ole Miss because of Coach Kiffin. I came to Ole Miss to be at Ole Miss to raise three kids. So, you know, our relationship really grew in those 3.5 years, and he did a lot for me, and I was very, very appreciative of how he treated me and my family, and learned a lot from him. So I have no ill will towards Coach Kiffin. He texts me on a regular basis, and there's certain things that we'll talk about, and there are certain things that we don't talk about. He's very competitive, just like I'm very competitive, right? And so obviously a lot of this went a different direction when now he had a new job with new responsibilities, and he's going to be super competitive to be the best that he can at that job, right, which is his job. And so I can separate the two. I know some people can't. So, you know, I tell a lot of these people, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I don't care. All right. Like I told an Ole Miss group the other day at 21, I said, all right, in 2021, if you said you could look in 2025 and you're about to be 11-1 and go to the playoff, would you take it if your coach was leaving? They're like, hell yeah. I was like, you would. Everybody won from it. It's okay, Keith. Like, you made a great hire. You did a great job. Every place isn't for everybody. That's coaches. That's players. That's your job. That's everything. And that's okay, you know. And so throughout the process, I'll be the first one to tell you, I told him I was thinking he was dumb if he was to leave. I wanted him to stay. That was a selfish decision because I love being the D.C. where I was at, right? But he decided what was better for him and his family, and that's for him to decide. So I have no ill will towards him at all. All right, wish him the best of luck. We play him like every other SEC team, and we're going to both show up and spot the ball and play. So I talk to him on a regular basis, but no ill will at all, right, and really appreciative of how he treated me and my family. And then this created an unbelievable opportunity for me as well on top that I really wasn't looking for, but so appreciative to have.
Wow. You love talk it. About an love open it. Book, Jensen. I yes. do, too. And I got to tell yes. you, that the key to me was the separating of the two, which people cannot do in so many different right. walks of life. I found yes. that to be fascinating, that he can separate the two. I'll talk to him about some stuff. We won't talk about other stuff. Mm-hmm. But, man, I'm appreciative of what he did for me and my family. I think that should that's a pretty good lesson there for people that were good friends. They're still good friends. They just have mm-hmm. to now go opposite of each other.
Spot the ball and let's go. He's going to be a rock star. Pete Golding is. The more they let him be himself, the better it's going to be. That's going to be awesome for recruiting too. I got to be honest, Dave. I really liked him anyway, and the program, because you get arguably the best quarterback in Trinidad Chambliss every down. You hope +220 to make the college football playoff is staring me right in the face. Like a Sydney Sweeney picture there. So it's looking pretty good with what I've got to go to battle with, man. And I love that when you've got a guy that has already moved on from the drama and it's about everything through the windshield in front of you, love to hear that. So very bullish on Ole Miss this year.
I got to be honest with you. Not that that soundbite is going to sway me, because we talked about what would you grab from these press conferences when we hear these coaches speak. Would you take anything in the betting profile? It does make me think, man, is he grounded? Man, does he relate? And I'm sure that if that's the message he can give to the media, you can only imagine what that message is going to be to Trinidad and to the rest of his star players and the rest of his players writ large there at Ole Miss. Because I was going to ask you before that, do you think this is more of a the machine keeps rolling with Pete, or it takes a step back because he's not Lane Kiffin? I think I'm more to the A than I am the B after hearing some of those things.
I would tend to agree. I mean, Kawan Lacy, I told you yesterday, you know, could be arguably the best running back and quarterback duo when you put those guys together. They added pretty heavily on defense in the linebacker room and the secondary. I mean, it feels very turnkey with the offense. Just wind it up and let it go. I think that's the best way forward. Let the athletes be athletes there on Saturdays.
So again, if you're up there on the podium today, you got big shoes to fill after that yesterday from Pete Golden. But we'll see. We'll hear from Arkansas, LSU, Mississippi State, and Texas. We're going to hear from Dan Hoard coming back next year on the program. Does a great job as the voice of the Cincinnati Bengals and University of Cincinnati Bearcats. We'll talk some Bengals football next with Dan right here on VSiN by the Books. We'll be right back.
by the books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis. And, man, I think you all know if you listen to the show each and every day how excited we are for football season, Jensen. I mean, we're fired up. We can't wait to turn the corner and get there. And I know the Bengals backers are waiting to see what this iteration of the Cincinnati Bengals are going to look like. No better man to have on the program back on VSiN by the books. Dan Hoard to rejoin the program to talk about those Cincinnati Bengals. Give him a follow on X at Dan_Hoard. He is the voice of the Bengals and also UC football as well. Kind enough to join us here on the Progressive Guest Line. So, Dan, I guess the first question should be, how do we curb the enthusiasm for Cincinnati, or should we at all? Because it feels like people are like, man, keep Joe Burrow healthy. Let's get some help on defense, and we got a real shot this year to turn things around.
You should definitely be enthusiastic about the Bengals being a legitimate contender this year. I certainly think they are. We all know what the mission was for Cincinnati this offseason. Pretty simple, fix the defense. As long as Joe Burrow is healthy with Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Chase Brown, this is going to be one of the top scoring teams in the NFL. And the defense doesn't need to be top five, but it can't be bottom five anymore. They've had too many games over the past several years where they've scored 30 or more and lost. Statistically, 7 times in the last 2 years, they've scored 33 or more points and lost. That's hard to do. It's almost impossible to do. Nobody else has done it over the last couple of years. So they have invested heavily in the defense. They traded for Dexter Lawrence. They signed Boye Mafe, Jonathan Allen, Brian Cook, and others. I think they've done a good job of fixing this defense. And if they have, this should be a really good team.
Yeah, it should. And Dan, when you look at kind of the schedule and kind of for our audience, that's what we like to do of, can you get off to a fast start? Because we know that's been an issue for Zach Taylor's teams in the past. You're home against Tampa and then on the road with two really good AFC tests against Houston and then the Steelers. The opening stanza in your eyes here, manageable and more importantly, winnable with some of those matchups before a week 6 bye.
I do think the early portion of this schedule is the toughest part of the Bengals schedule this year, that week 2 game at Houston. They'll certainly be an underdog in that game. And then week 3 at Pittsburgh, always tough in the AFC North. But it is a 17-game schedule, and it gets much easier after that. It is ranked as the 3rd easiest schedule in the NFL based on, you know, win total projections this year. So if they can kind of hold water in those first few weeks, be around 500, maybe a little bit over, then when the schedule starts to get much easier, they can really thrive.
Dan, I think the elephant in the room is Zach Taylor, and that I don't know how long a Super Bowl appearance buys you. But I kind of look at it and go, what he does is he coaches offense, as we well know. And as you mentioned, they've got one of the best ones there. Is that enough, or does it have to be both sides of the ball? You're the head coach of the entirety of the team, obviously, and Al Golden's in charge of that defense. Where is Zach Taylor right now with the Cincinnati faithful? Are they giving him the pass, or are they saying we got to get something done this year?
It's a little bit of both. He gets a pass for last year because Joe Burrow missed 9 games. If Joe Burrow misses 9 games, you know this team is not going to be close to its capabilities. So it's hard to blame Zach Taylor for that. On the other hand, this is a team that's missed the playoffs 3 straight years, at least with Joe Burrow on the roster. Now, he has missed significant time in 2 of those last 3 years. But nonetheless, when you've got that guy and you don't make the playoffs, people start to get uneasy. So I think the expectation for the fan base this year is that at least the Bengals are back in postseason play.
Yeah, I would agree. And Dan, to be fair, you mentioned that this offense could be one of the top scoring in the entirety of the league. I know a lot of fantasy football people out there are starting to make some of their big boards. How high up should Chase Brown go, just knowing not only the workflow carrying the ball, but one of the best at receiving out of the backfield as well?
I think he should be really high. I think he's a top 10 running back, maybe closer to 10 than 1, but he had 1,000 rushing yards and roughly 450 receiving yards last year. He's been a double-digit touchdown guy each of the last 2 years, and I think his workload is going to go up, assuming that he stays healthy. I do think that they would like to increase the likelihood that Joe Burrow doesn't get hit in hopes of allowing him to play 17 games. So with that being the thought, you bring the running game into play more if you can. He was really effective in the second half of last season in terms of efficiency. And in Chase Brown's case, it's not just handoffs, but also short passes, swing passes, screens, stuff like that. So I would anticipate a big statistical year for Chase Brown.
I think here at the network, Dan, we've got maybe, I don't want to say it's split, but it does feel like we got a lot of people that like the Ravens to win this division. There are a lot of people that like the Bengals to win this division. I'm one of them. To get over that win total of 9.5 right now, you mentioned that defense, that Al Golden in year number two, that they're going to have to be better. What has he got the players now to run the scheme that he wants to run coming in from Notre Dame now in year number two?
Well, they've addressed their biggest weaknesses. So two big things stood out last year, missed tackles and no pass rush. So I'll start with the second of those two things, the pass rush. They signed Boye Mafe to a big deal, part of Seattle's Super Bowl winning defense, which obviously thrived by sending wave after wave of pass rushers after the quarterback. They signed Jonathan Allen, historically one of the better interior pass rushers in the NFL. They traded for Dexter Lawrence, who didn't have the counting stats last year, but the metrics were still good in terms of pressures and stopping the run and stuff like that. I mean, that's a 340-pound man who's had as many as 9 sacks in a season. They've spent first-round draft picks in recent years on Miles Murphy and Shamar Stewart. They're hoping those guys continue to ascend and their sack totals go up. So that's addressing the pass rush. And then in terms of missed tackles, they signed the highest-priced safety available in free agency in Brian Cook. He'll replace Geno Stone. Geno Stone was among the NFL leaders in missed tackles. He had more last year than Brian Cook has had in a 4-year NFL career. So between those two things, they are hoping that they've addressed the biggest problems that caused that Al Golden defense to really struggle for much of last year.
Yeah, gosh, I can't wait to see how that pays off. Speaking of paying off, Dan, we know that the NFL predicated on being really good in the draft. For people that are just getting acquainted with this year's draft class, guys that really jumped out to you, maybe where they were taken and already kind of being in the building and reports you've heard about that, anyone we should be keeping our eye on, both offensively and defensively as well?
Well, keep in mind, they traded away their first-round pick. They had the 10th overall pick, and that pick went to the Giants for Dexter Lawrence. So with the Bengals draft this year, you're looking at round 2 for their first pick. And I didn't mention this name when I was running down the list of pass rushers that they're hoping will help transform this defense this year. But their first pick was a pass rusher, Cassius Howell out of Texas A&M, SEC Defensive Player of the Year last year, led the SEC in sacks. So they're certainly hoping that he can contribute in a big way, again, in hopes of sending waves after opposing quarterbacks. They spent most of their draft picks in the trenches. Their offensive draft picks, two of their first three were offensive linemen. They did draft a wide receiver out of Georgia named Colby Young. Now, when you've got Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, if they stay healthy, there's only so many passes to potentially be caught. The Bengals still have Andre Yosivash as their third wide receiver. But Colby Young has an opportunity to kind of come into the rotation, contribute maybe in a smaller way as a rookie, but hopefully ascend as the years go forward.
All right, we've got a couple minutes to go here with Dan Hoard. Does a great job covering the Bengals. High expectations, again, win total 9.5, second betting choice here to win the division. The expectations, Dan, might not be as high for Bearcats football here in the Big 12. I'm seeing they're close to 100-1 to win this conference with Scott Satterfield as the head coach. Is there reasons to be optimistic there as well with UC football?
Well, the biggest reason for optimism is probably that they might have the best offensive line in college football, which sounds crazy to people that follow the SEC and the Big Ten and some of the leagues that get more attention and more respect in the Big 12. But Cincinnati has a returning All-American at left guard named Evan Tengizdal. Their left tackle, Joe Cotton's probably going to be a day one or day two NFL draft pick. And their center, Taron Tyo, might be an NFL draft pick. So when you go left guard, left tackle, and center, the entire left side of your offensive line is probably as good as anybody. That's a pretty good building block to be optimistic about. So the difficult thing for Cincinnati this year is that there are 16 teams in the Big 12. You play 9 league games. So there's a bit of a, you know, luck of the draw when it comes to your league schedule, and their luck wasn't good this year. If you look at most of the preseason polls, Cincinnati plays the top six teams in the Big 12, and half of those games are on the road. So the league schedule is going to make it challenging to continue to ascend, but they've gotten a little bit better every year under Scott Satterfield. They've added two wins to their win total every year. At one point last year, they were number 17 in the country. So they do have some good players. They're counting on a transfer quarterback, J.C. French from Georgia Southern. So we'll see.
Dan, you're the best. You're just the voice of Cincinnati football, period. Bengals, Bearcats, doesn't matter. Does a great job there. Give him a follow on X at Dan_Horde. We are fired up for football, that's for sure. We're going to hear from world number one, talk some baseball, a lot of things to get. Just getting it started is VSiN by the books.